Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 198 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, holy cow. Great to see you right now.
Yeah, good to see somebody that's into Bitcoin and crypto on a week like this.
Hey, yeah, so we'll get to the price action here in a second. But there's a pretty big announcement from a Bitcoin perspective. We now have 95% of all Bitcoin in mined. So that's, I think it's like 19.95 million Bitcoin. The fixed amount is 21 million, right? So it's mined. It's going to take another 100 years to mine the last 5%. But yeah, that's kind of big. The last 5% is there.
Yeah, it's like these mining milestones are cool, like, because it just puts in perspective the asymptotic approach to mining every Bitcoin. Like 95% of it's mined in the first 16 years, the final 5% is mined over the last 100 years, 115 years. So, you know, the scarcity stuff, it's just a reminder of the scarcity side of Bitcoin.
Yeah. So speaking of Bitcoin, this week has been kind of crazy. Price dropped, below $92,000. That's down like 12% in the last week. Fear and greed is at a record level lows. It's like 17 right now is, I think, the last thing that I saw.
I saw a 10.
A 10, yeah. That's insane.
10 low.
Yeah, so it's just been a wild ride here the past week. There's, a ton of data. We're trying to figure out what's going on. I know there's a lot of disappointment with some of the inflation and jobs data. Probably not going to be coming out for October just with all the shutdown, which is kind of disappointing. But that's, I think, one thing. There's concerns over what this AI bubble, the VIX is what it's one of its highest ratings. Institutional buying has fallen below the daily supply issued by miners. I think I saw it was almost like less than a third of what they have been doing in the past. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. If you look, from what I'm seeing, is 72% of all the circulating Bitcoin remains in profit, which I guess is good. And Glassnode was talking about that the long-term holders are steadily realizing profits. I think their monthly spending went from about 12,000 Bitcoin per day to about 26,000, which is very consistent with normal bull market distribution. And it's not really an exodus from all the whales. So, yeah, been kind of wild.
Well, it's definitely wild, man. I saw the price like on a chart as low as 89,000, which is, you know, our all-time highs at 125. So you're talking, you know, 30% off the highs. Is that a bull market retracement that everything recovers from? And I mean, it dipped down there, the CME gap at like 92,000. So it closed that CME gap. So that's a good thing, because they're always like a magnet for price to bring things back down. So, you know, either the bull run's over or it isn't over. There's a lot of things that indicate it's not over, or a lot of things that indicate we weren't really in a bull market. Bitcoin's bull markets don't really bounce around between 100 and 125,000 for almost a year and then crash. Like, we never seen that before. And so I'm not sure what's going on. Like, the new Bitcoin price action was bounce around in a range. You know, last year it was 50 to 70 and then 75 to 105. And then this year was 100 to 125. And then we broke to the downside back into that second range. But to me, I mean, are we done with Bitcoin adoption? Are we done with debasing currency? Are we done with low interest rates? Are we done with liquidity? Feels like no. Feels like we're not done with all of those things. So Bitcoin shouldn't be crushed here. But it's color me surprised that we're down this low. I'm not, you know, this is November of the year when things are supposed to be booming. Even if you just kind of make it relative to the halving, you know, and this has kind of been a weird one because we had an all-time high before the halving and all that stuff. But I mean, on the downside, like, yeah, you know, we've been talking about whales selling for a while. That's what they do at the top. You know, we're kind of it's a pretty substantial breakdown. So, I mean, maybe we're in for it. Like, yeah, to me, I was looking at it, I'm like, well, here's the thing about me. We hit 125,000. I'm not going to sell at 125,000. If we drop down to 90,000, then if I did sell at the absolute peak, then I could pay my taxes and then buy back at 90 and break even. So, like, I would, like, that's a ton of risk to reset my cost basis. So, like, I didn't, for most Bitcoiners, 72% are still in profit. For most Bitcoiners, like, well, if this is the top, then I missed it, but it wouldn't have been worth selling anyway. And yeah, unless this thing goes to 50,000 again, which is kind of hard for me to figure out how that could happen, just based on all the new entrants into the market, the ETFs, corporations, countries, and things like that. I'm not sure how we get back to 50 without people just buying them up like crazy in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So it'll find a bottom, I think. And I mean, I can't imagine us doing an 80% retracement off the top. You know, we didn't have that big peak that really isn't a selling opportunity for anybody. It's, you know, it's just something on the chart. And usually we're 70, 80% off that peak. We didn't have a peak. Like, we had 125, but we were in the one teens forever. So it's not like previous cycles. So I think we're down, but I can't see that this is like, well, Bitcoin's broken. It's over. Like, I don't see that. But it's weird for sure. I didn't expect it. I thought, kind of as we approach the end of the year with the shutdowns over, like, you know, all of that kind of stuff, maybe there's some cash that's not in the system because the shutdown withheld some funds, but not enough to go from 115 to 90. Like, that's a ton of Bitcoin selling. So anyway, no, I mean, this is just one of those times where it's nice. Like, some of the Bitcoin mantras, like, just hold and don't sell your Bitcoin. It's great for this kind of time. It's like, no, I'm not going to sell. I'm just going to pay attention. I will say one thing. It feels like the bottom. Like, everybody is down on Bitcoin right now.
Yeah.
And when you're in like a raging bull market that retracts 30%, everybody's like, oh, just a retracement, man, we're still going, we're still rocking, everything's good, you know, we'll you know, dips are for buying, blah 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 blah. This doesn't feel like that. This feels like awful. So that's a good thing for, in my mind, but you know, it doesn't matter. It's not like I'm not gonna sell. So
it was similar to when I think Bitcoin went down to like 4K and you and I were talking about that. Like, did we make a mistake? It would have been a great time to get involved. I did read about Bernstein. They came out with a letter to their investors and talked about how this historical four-year cycle, we previously saw peaks in 2013, in 2017, in 2021. And I think I had a lot of conversations with people saying, you know, I think October 2025 is probably when I'm going to try to get out. But I did not, just thinking that things would be different. They said that the fourth quarter weakness is due to the belief that that would happen, 2025 would follow suit, and it created somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So they said the backdrop, though, is fundamentally stronger, and it actually, the evidence points towards a relatively shallow correction and build a new bottom, and then not this historical 60 or 70% drawdown that we've seen in the past.
The philosophy that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, that like people sold because they thought October, you know, based on the calendar, I kind of like that jives for me. I bought some Bitcoin last year and actually set a reminder that hit in like October that was like, hey, sell this Bitcoin. And I didn't, because I'm like, you know, okay, thanks, previous me. And it would have been like one in the teens or whatever. But I didn't, but everybody else is gonna be like, okay, time to collect, time to take some profit or whatever. So I think that kind of holds in my mind. And it also holds because Bitcoin usually makes everybody pay, makes it hurt. And that would hurt a lot if, oh man, I got it right, I nailed it, I sold it at 112,000. This is at 90. I'm so smart. Bang, it's at 150 6 weeks later, and you're toast. And now you're regretting it. So I that's kind of what Bitcoin does to people. And so we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, it was interesting. They were talking about some of the long-term holders selling, and they sold about 340,000 Bitcoin, which is about about $38 billion. These guys were had at least a 1 year tenure and had sold in the past 6 months. There's only been $34 billion of inflows for the spot ETFs in the Treasury. So even though you had this huge institutional buy pressure, there's still been a lot of people selling. And I feel like usually at this time, we have the government kind of turning on the money printer because midterm elections are around the corner and they're preparing for the next major election. And that seems to be something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they said that QE was going to start on December 1st, and we're a couple weeks away from that. So we'll see. I mean, if you look at the chart that everybody loved that showed the M2 money supply versus Bitcoin on a, whatever it was, 90-day lag or something, you know, that's that chart correlation is broken off a long time ago. So that, you know, that didn't hold surprise. But I think in principle, Bitcoin likes to find its way towards that. So, you know, whatever, man, if you're into Bitcoin and you're buying and selling it, like you're going to get wrecked. So that's just how it is. Maybe if you just started into it, you're in trouble. But for the most part, I mean, I think if 72% are in profit, you know, some of these new guys, it happens every time. Some of the new guys get like show losses and get frustrated and get out. Some of them stick around. Like, you know, some of them took the attitude of, you know what, I'm just going to buy this stuff and hang on to it for 4 years. So even if you bought it at 120, it's, you know, it doesn't feel like you bought it at the peak top. You bought it right there with a bunch of other people that were buying over the course of a year.
Well, I think it reminds me kind of what El Salvador did at the beginning, where they bought a bunch of Bitcoin and then it kind of tanked. And it was like, oh, you guys are idiots. Why would you do this? And then 4 years later, it was like, okay, I want to be just like El Salvador. And yeah. Now they were sitting on a ton of profit.
Not only that, they bought like, what was it? $100 million worth of Bitcoin this week. They bought it. They bought about 1,000 Bitcoin. Bukele put a X post up that had his chart from. It was kind of a chart. It was a pretty disgusting chart. Like the Y axis went to 5,000 Bitcoin, like instead of zero. So it looked like it was real flat and low, and then it popped up from like 6,000 to 7,000 in one day because they made a big buy. I don't know. I think it's awesomely hilarious because the IMF's been after them about don't buy any more Bitcoin. And they just bought, I mean, $100 million worth of Bitcoin, 1,000 Bitcoins, nothing to shake a stick at. Like, that's going to put them ahead of, you know, the people that haven't started, it puts them further ahead. It's harder and harder to catch up, especially if the price continues to go up. You know, it gets, that goal gets further and further away.
Well, some positive news that I did see around kind of the U.S. government stuff. The Treasury and the IRS came out and issued some new guidance last week that paves the way for some of the crypto products to generate staking yield for investors. So things like Ethereum and Solana, right? It's providing this safe harbor to stake digital assets without risking running afoul of the existing tax and regulatory guidelines. So I think the caveat to that is the trust must only hold one type of digital asset from a permissionless proof of stake blockchain network. Follow certain liquidity protocols, form no other function besides holding, staking, and redeeming the token in question, and rely on a custodian and independent staking provider to handle the staking process. So kind of cool that we're seeing this, and I think when we talk about some of the ETFs, there's a handful of things that we'll talk about related to that, Tim.
Yeah, I read a little bit about it, but the thing that got me was like, okay, so I'm a major ETF provider. All right, give me these five staking tokens. Each one has its own ETF because the rule says you got to have one token and, you know, per ETF. Cool. Now I'm going to have an ETF that holds all five of those ETFs. Then there's no rules against an ETF holding ETFs. So like now I got a blended top five staking token ETF. Unless I'm missing something, I don't see why you couldn't do that, because I mean, that's kind of how you cloud all of this stuff. Like, there's tech ETFs that have the Bitcoin ETFs in them, right? Because now that's just a security and it's handled totally differently. So it just smells like the government made a rule that they knew was no big deal, but it sounded good. So let it roll.
Yeah, it's a start for sure, right? I think no one is expecting government to make the best decisions the first time around.
Yeah, at least they made a decision. That's better than a lot of times.
I mean, I think this whole excitement and a little bit of excitement is we're starting to trend in the right direction where the US really wants to be this leader in the crypto space, which we've talked about for a while. But we are starting to move that way. And there's a lot of other countries that are realizing that we are moving that way and they're following suit, which is kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, you can't let a new industry slip away. I mean, a lot of people know that they were not friendly to the internet early tech adopters and things like that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why California did what they did and took off and made an incubator and, you know, Silicon Valley and all that. Like, yeah, if you're not friendly to it, you're not going to attract the talent. You're not going to attract the innovation and the jobs and the, you know, tax revenue and everything else. I mean, like, what's the downside? So you have entrepreneurs come in and fail. Okay. You're going to have entrepreneurs come in and fail in every industry all the time and nobody bats an eye about it. So I don't get it. They're pushing AI like it's this awesome thing. It's a job killer, like a net job loser. You know, at least Bitcoin and crypto is not that. So I don't know. I guess it depends on who's got the strongest lobby.
Yeah. So speaking of what the government is doing, apparently the White House and the IRS are reviewing a proposed rule that would grant the IRS access to information on U.S. taxpayers' digital asset transactions conducted in foreign jurisdictions. And really, I think the main thing here is they want to implement the new CARF rules that would promote the growth and use of digital assets in the U.S. and alleviate concerns that there'd be a lack of a reporting program that could disadvantage the U.S. or U.S. digital asset exchanges. So ideally, just keep the money here. I mean, I think that's what every country is wanting to do is prevent this flight risk of dollars out of their ecosystem into somewhere else. And the U.S. apparently is not immune to that same feeling as well.
Yeah. I mean, to me, you know, most people that are in the United States just stay in the United States and never even look at moving outside of the United States. The tax liability that you pick up when you move, when you're an expat from the United States sucks. And, you know, they really don't let you make any money anywhere without paying the United States unless you're, I think it's 330 days you got to be outside of the country every year in order to avoid paying federal income taxes. And so, yeah, if you're doing transactions outside of the United States, they're going to go after you from a tax standpoint. This is, to me, this is just them playing catch up. They probably should have done this 6-7 years ago when this was, you know, they started kind of, the IRS started taking digital assets a little more seriously and they actually were like, it's property, wash sales are okay. Like they actually kind of had a list of things that that told people how to treat their digital asset sales. I don't know why they didn't do it back then, but I don't know. It doesn't make sense, but neither does almost anything they do.
Oh, I think it was back in the Clinton days where he put an exit tax on people that wanted to give up their U.S. citizenship. And I think the biggest story we heard was Roger Ver leaving the U.S. and all the stuff going on with that, right? So, yeah, they're trying, like every other country, to keep as much money inside the U.S. as possible and making it difficult to move around. So I'm not happy about that from an individual perspective, but it is what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like paying taxes. If I moved and wasn't even using United States resources, I would be even more like, man, I don't like paying taxes.
Yeah. The DOJ was in the news too. They just launched a new interagency scam center strike force, the goal being to dismantle international pickpocketing and crypto scams that are tied to the Chinese crime networks. So they said that they think these schemes have stolen up to $135 billion from Americans in 2024. And their office has seized $480 million. So just a very small piece of that. I think there's a lot of people talking about it. Again, they're excited. It's a major shift towards a kind of a coordinated federal offensive against global crypto fraud networks. So I'll be intrigued to see if that continues to grow and they get more crypto back from some of the crime networks out there.
Yeah, I mean, the scammy stuff is off the freaking rails, dude. My phone might ring 10 times a day with scammy calls, and it's, we're from the loan processing department, you're approved for $50,000. Like, they're just preying on people that are strapped for cash because inflation's crushing them and everything else. I mean, it sucks. And then, you know, once one of your exchanges or something that you're into that's crypto related gets onto the dark web, they're like, oh, this guy's got crypto, let's hit him up, let's send the emails, let's send the phone calls and everything else. It sucks. So yeah, I hope they make them pay. I think it's real dirty, and it prevents a lot of people from getting into Bitcoin. I mean, you talk about self-custody and making mistakes and you're worried about doing things yourself. Well, now it's not even like, well, you know what? I lost my key phrase. My Trezor blew up and now I'm toast. It's, man, I answered a call from somebody that said they were at Coinbase and they knew all the stuff about me and it had to be from Coinbase. And then next thing I know, I sent my crypto or whatever. And like, you know, you're just under attack from 100 different ways. If it's not like what food to buy at the store and what's bad for your health, or like, you know, the algorithm stealing your time and social media, they're outright trying to take your money on scams on your cell phone. I mean, like everybody's under attack all the time. And it's tough to play defense all the time when you're also trying to raise kids and work and do everything else. So it's a pretty crappy situation.
Yeah, I get those calls all the time too. And they're very good at like spoofing the number now too. Like they all can spoof it. So it looks like it's coming from Coinbase. But the good news is a lot of these places like Coinbase will send you an email at the same time, right? So if you're not getting an email, then it's spam. So, and almost all of it's spam. I don't think Coinbase is really proactively calling anybody in general. And I don't think any of the exchanges are.
No.
So you're going to have to reach out, do some research. Don't ever do whatever anybody says on the phone call. Just take the information, call back the actual number if you need to.
Right. Yeah. And if you want to get even more nonsense calls, own rental property. You're constantly being peppered with calls from people that are trying to take houses from old widows for cheap. Like that's the game. It's the crappiest way to make money, dude. But like, whatever. The more people understand that they're constantly under attack, the more they'll realize, oh, self-sovereignty might be a good thing. Like nobody's looking out for me. Every time I give more information to my bank or anywhere else, I'm just increasing my risk that I get more phone calls and they know more about me to convince me that they're Wells Fargo and not some person that's just straight up trying to steal my money.
Because if the banks are selling information for more money, they're getting hacked and saying, oh, sorry about that.
Exactly. Yeah. This is a bit of a tangent, but we talk about selling information. Kroger makes 1/3 of their profit annually from selling your information when you use your Kroger Plus card, all your buying behaviors and things like that. One third of their profit has nothing to do with groceries. It has to do with you saving 50 cents on a loaf of bread because they capture that information and sell it to other people. So yeah, I mean, the information is super valuable and you're constantly under attack.
A quick break from the podcast to talk about a little PDF I put together for everybody. I've been in crypto since about 2018 and made a lot of mistakes. The one thing I always get asked is, what would you do differently if you got in today? So what I've done is created a PDF that talks about the 10 mistakes that I've made and how not to make those mistakes ever again. If you're interested, you can check the link in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/10 and get access to that PDF. That's the number 10, not spelled out. Back to the podcast.
All right, so going back to some of the other stuff happening in the U.S., I know I was reading about there's a crypto advocacy group called the Digital Chamber. They are expanding their efforts to the state level as some of the midterms approach in 2026. Their goal is to get more in the state and local governments. And they said this initiative really come. The lawmakers at the federal level have passed and are working on bills to regulate the industry. But for the U.S. to really be the crypto capital of the world and lead, they felt that it was an opportunity to provide the national trusted brand that we have cultured at the federal level. So I think this is awesome, right? I mean, I think there's a ton of people at the state and local levels that still aren't aware of Bitcoin. And a lot of what they're going to be doing is helping with the education piece. But we've seen how important some of the stuff that Fairshake did in this last election made a difference in getting some of the right people on board to actually have conversations. Now, it's definitely not happening as fast as I think anybody wants it to, but it is night and day different from the last administration.
Oh yeah, man. And I get approached basically every election cycle, like, hey, would you like to, you know, support so-and-so? This is like maybe local state level kind of stuff, maybe federal level for congressperson, but not ever senator. But every time I do, they're like, well, what's their stance on Bitcoin? Like, if they don't have a good answer, then I'm like, well, if they want to talk to me about it, then I'll consider it. But if they don't, if they're not on Bitcoin, like, they're going to just play the stupid political game. Like, and if you get into Bitcoin and it kind of gives you one chance to like put your head, pick your head up above the fray of politics and start to like, oh man, it's economic stuff. Oh, the debasing of the dollar is causing a lot of problems. Maybe that's kind of like a root cause analysis thing to get to instead of, you know, social issues or whatever that are kind of just derivatives of the economic issues. So yeah, like I think the more people, the more local politicians, state and federal politicians get into Bitcoin even a little bit, the more they are able to think in a outside of the current system, which would be great.
That will change the demand as well. So once all these places need to get their piece of the pie, right, the demand for Bitcoin will far outpace the supply for sure.
Oh yeah, trust me, man. There's my conspiracy theory hat that's like, oh, they're tanking the Bitcoin price so they can get their positions locked in and then they can let it rip. So there is definitely that piece that I didn't mention when we were talking Bitcoin price.
So other companies that had some interesting news, Grayscale just filed for an IPO. They've been talking about this for a little while. The first 9 months for them shows a 20% year-over-year decline in revenue, which is kind of crazy. Their Grayscale GBTC has seen $25 billion in outflows since the Bitcoin ETFs started trading. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of decline in revenue. Now, at the same time, they're leading in a lot of these coming out with new ETFs as well. So they're still doing well. They just have this different mindset of let's be first to the market, charge a lot, and then we'll try to hold on to that as long as possible, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a terrible business model. Everybody else is fighting for 25 bips and you're getting 2%. So, you know, if you can get 20% of the total assets, you know, under control, then you're actually making more money than the big guys. So I think that's how they roll. And, you know, honestly, somebody's got to blaze some trails and then the secondary market will pick up and kind of commoditize everything and move it along. So it's not a bad business model. But I mean, honestly, Grayscale didn't really try to hold on to their GBTC Bitcoin holders. They let it rip. So, you know, that jives with kind of their actions.
Some other pretty big news from SoFi. So SoFi is probably the largest online lender in the U.S. They launched SoFi Crypto on Tuesday. They're claiming to become the first and only nationally chartered bank to offer crypto trading to customers. So they had previously done crypto trading partnering with Coinbase back in 2019, and then that was suspended in 2023, back when they got fined and all that kind of stuff. They teased this, I think, back in July of this year. But now they're back, and their CEO is saying he doesn't think some of the major banks like JP Morgan and Wells Fargo, Bank of America, are going to follow suit. So these guys, SoFi, is now going to be kind of the true one-stop-shop model. And that's going to be interesting. I know you have talked a lot about that, is once Wells Fargo is able to show a savings account with Bitcoin right there, well, SoFi looks like they're going to be the ones doing it. It's not going to be Wells Fargo, but once I think SoFi does this and people follow suit or see what's happening, then I don't know why everybody else isn't going to follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as El Salvador jumping in. I mean, you're going to have Bhutan and Kazakhstan and Czech Republic, and, you know, maybe it takes 3-4 years, but they're all going to jump in. I think the banking market will move faster because it's not like they actually have to spend much money at all to turn that switch on so that you can log into your app and see your Bitcoin balance. So, you know, but SoFi has always been out in front. They're in that consortium with Cantor Fitzgerald and Jack Mallers for the 21 stock that still hasn't gotten off the ground because the SEC was shut down for 40 days when they were trying to get things approved. So, you know, SoFi is very like crypto Bitcoin forward. It doesn't surprise me that they're the first ones to kind of jump into this, and good for Bitcoin, good for crypto, good for exposure. So what's the downside? Let people invest in what they want to invest in or save how they want to save. That's the downside and the upside. So it's just a thing that's happening. I would think that SoFi kind of could get to where Coinbase is as far as like, man, you know, if I'm going to hold it with somebody, you know, a SoFi is better than a Voyager, you know, start crypto startup kind of thing. A bank with a charter would probably be a little bit more of a trusted party to custody your Bitcoin.
Now, even the SoFi is kind of knocking on JP Morgan. JP Morgan had some big news. They launched their tokenized deposits asset, JPMD, on Base, when Base is layer two. So this is, I think they piled it back in June. I'm interested. The deposit token and a white paper and everything. And there's already, I think, a lot of people saying they're going to be using this, and it's going to be a lot of institutions, of course, is what they'll be using it to make payments 24/7. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it's JP Morgan. People are going to start listening. So I think the stable coin and Bitcoin adoption momentum is still there. So this should keep running. Yeah.
Jim. Speaking of Coinbase, they just had a former partner from Goldman Sachs that's going to join their company. Their goal is really to have this everything exchange strategy. And I think she did a lot of this at Goldman Sachs, and they're moving towards that. So Coinbase continues to push the envelope, try to be in the lead. And one of the other big things they did is they moved from Texas to Delaware. So reincorporating in Texas, they cited that the state's business-friendly regulations for the move, and there's been a handful of other U.S. tech firms that have moved to Texas just because of all the craziness that I think partly Elon Musk said, don't ever incorporate in Delaware after the wild stuff that happened there. But their legal officer at Coinbase said Texas offers efficiency and predictability, in part thanks to recent corporate law reforms that enhance governance, flexibility, and legal predictability. Delaware's legal framework once provided companies with consistency, but no more. Delaware's chancy court in recent years has been rife with unpredictable outcomes. So even Armstrong came out and said, Texas has a strong culture of celebrating builders who are growing our economy, creating prosperity for all. They've also embraced crypto. So we've talked about it before, but when one state does something that is better for companies, then you're going to start to see companies flock there. And Delaware used to be this place where everybody wanted to go incorporate, and now they've kind of shot themselves in the foot, and you're having some of the largest companies out there leaving Delaware and going to other places now.
Yeah, I mean, this is how it works. I don't know why it's just Delaware did what they did with the Elon compensation piece going against shareholder wishes. But yeah, I mean, when I was starting companies and doing stuff, that was the thing. You know, everybody incorporates in Delaware because mainly their protections against like parent company lawsuits and things going up the ladder. So, you know, if another state's offering better or the same, but they'll also go with shareholder wishes, then yeah, I think it makes sense to move. I mean, it's not like you're moving to headquarters. You know, there's not a lot of cost. I mean, you're just reincorporating in a different state. It's almost like an insurance policy against something kind of major happening and you getting a bad judgment on it. So yeah, this is how it works. I mean, look at In-N-Out is closing stores in California. Elon Musk pulled out. Like New York's is feeling some of this stuff too. I mean, if you're not friendly to a company and it's digital, forget about it. They're going to move.
Yeah, no, we're seeing definitely a lot of that. The other big thing that I saw too was the CBOE. It looks like they launched continuous Bitcoin futures last week, and they're talking about continuous Ethernet. Ethereum futures are coming shortly, but this is business that's typically been offshore, and to bring it back into the U.S. is going to create a lot of revenue. So it's great news for the U.S.
Yeah, no, I mean it's going to happen. So might as well happen in the U.S. and be regulated a little better. So it's fine with me.
So some stablecoin news. Independent Community Bankers of America, the ICBA, their National Trade Association representing small banks, they've asked regulators to block Sony Bank's bid for a national trust charter to issue stablecoins. So just this, I feel like, is more banks trying to stop newer companies from coming in and invading their space. I think they filed against Coinbase's trust charter application earlier this month, and Ball accused lobbyists of trying to dig regulatory moats rather than protect customers. So it's just continued to be banks are scared that these new financial companies are coming in and are going to take over some of the piss poor job they've been doing for a long time.
The regulatory moats are very in fashion. So everybody's going to try to build them when you're on that side of things. So I think, you know, that's why you see a slow play in regulations, is so that they can get those things built. And then when the regulations come out, it makes it tougher and tougher for the new entrants to get in. So sucks, but that's it.
So let's talk about some of the ETFs. Bitcoin's ETFs last Thursday saw 870 million of outflows. It's the second largest day since launch. I think the largest was back in February 25th of like 1.14 billion. So crazy, wild day. We talked about the price earlier. What is interesting is Emory University, right down the road from us, I saw they doubled their Bitcoin ETF exposure in the third quarter, which is huge. I think it was about 52 million. It's probably come down since then, right? But the interesting piece too, it was the Grayscale Mini Trust. It was not the BlackRock, I bet. So I think they put about 79 million into the gold fund too. So they are definitely hedging their bets with everything, but they got a lot of money apparently.
Yeah, I saw Harvard. They're, you know, they do reporting for their endowments, and they were up and something like 200% in from their previous, I don't know if it was previous year or whenever it was earlier, but yeah, they're buying more shares. That's on a per share basis, not on a dollar basis. So they're still accumulating. So, you know, Harvard, pretty smart folks.
Yeah, the Ethereum ETFs had about 259 million in outflows. So still pretty large, all things considered. But I think one of the biggest news from an ETF perspective was that Canary Capital had the first XRP ETF launched. The day one trading volume surpassed Wise's Solana's ETF, so by $1 million, so 58 million versus 57 million. So that was, I think, the big news is out of what 900 ETFs launched this year, the XRP ETF had the most, right? VSOL was second. The difference is on day two, the XRP one had 26 million, where VSOL actually went up to 72 million. So Solana still has a little bit more traction compared to XRP, but still a pretty big day for XRP and that community to have their ETF launched and doing pretty well.
For sure. Yeah, the XRP stuff, I mean, again, I don't really get it, but it seems to never go away. So an ETF launch makes sense that they're seeing some success.
They got a huge fan base, so there's apparently a lot of excitement. I know we talked about Solana and how Bitwise was one of the first. Well, VanEck just announced their Solana ETF. They're doing the whole zero fees until $1 billion of assets under management, or February 17th of 2026, whichever comes first. Then they'll move it down to 30 basis points. If you look at what Bitwise and Grayscale's Solana ETFs have done so far, they've pulled in $382 million since launch. The interesting piece too, Solana Strategies or Sol Strategies will be the staking partner for the fund. We talked about that earlier, where now you need a third party if you're going to do staking. So Sol Strategies is going to be that third party. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the staking will be interesting because I think it's easy to sell the dividend equivalent there. I think the ETFs are still, there's still juice left. You know, the Bitcoin strategy companies, it seems like they're running out of steam for now. I don't think they're dead, but I do think it's the juice is a little tougher to squeeze when you're talking about the XRP and Sol staking ETFs and things. I think it's just a little bit easier to get some funds flow going.
Well, next week will be interesting too. So Grayscale is expected to have the first Doge ETF launch next week, which I'm still amazed that there's that much interest in it, but apparently somebody wants it.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody knows a story of somebody that made a bunch of money on Doge in 2020 or whatever in 2021. And so, like, everybody still kind of chases the rabbit. They don't even bother to find out what it's about.
The DTCC has also listed Bitwise's Chainlink ETF under its active and pre-launch category. So we're probably going to see a Chainlink ETF happen very shortly as well.
That makes sense. I mean, the cat's out of the bag. ETFs are about to, you know, everything that's on CoinMarketCap will have an ETF eventually.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the digital asset treasuries core strategy. Huge buy, 8,178 Bitcoin for about $835 million. They now hold just less than 200 Bitcoin, less of 650,000. I think it's 649,870. The other crazy piece to what's going on with Strategy, their MNAV is below one. So didn't expect that to happen anytime soon. Their shares, I think, are down 56% the last 4 months. Now, I think their stock has actually underperformed Bitcoin for the past almost 2 years. So there was also rumors of them selling their Bitcoin, but sellers kind of squashed that pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, I'm paying attention to MicroStrategy. I still own shares, and the $835 million they spent, the majority of that came from the MSTE, the European preferred that they launched. So that's another piece that, I mean, they're buying without having to, they got to pay 10% in dividends or whatever. So yeah, share price is under $200 a share, MNAV under one. It's pretty wild. The options market's still live. The volatility should still be there. So they're not selling. It was very weird to me that there's the guy on X was like, wow, they sold. Da, da, da. I'm like, why would they sell Bitcoin right now? They don't owe anything anywhere. The convertible notes are the only the kind of debt that they have to pay. I mean, they're in debt in preferred perpetual shares that they have to pay dividends until forever, but they're not. They don't have to pay all of the capital back. So if they sold Bitcoin, it would be peanuts. They wouldn't sell thousands of Bitcoin. So that's, I don't know. The whole thing is weird. I mean, they just got a huge cash inflow from Europe. Why would they sell Bitcoin when they're flush with cash? So the Strategy is doing what Strategy does, which is buy Bitcoin and not sell it. So under $200 a share is pretty wild. And an MNAV under one is pretty wild. It definitely doesn't feel like something that happens at the top of a Bitcoin market. You know, if you remember, MicroStrategy was a huge buying opportunity back in December of 2022. Is it a huge buying opportunity now? I mean, it's, if you believe it's not going, I mean, honestly, it's better than buying Bitcoin right now because it's under one. So you can buy a share of, you can buy a share of MicroStrategy for under the price of that share's representative value of the Bitcoin they hold. So yeah, I mean, How much lower than, you know, I don't know what it is, 0.96 or something, like 0.95, like how much lower is it going to go before people are like, oh, I'm either going to buy Bitcoin or I'm going to buy Strategy. And with Strategy, you can do a covered call strategy and generate some cash. So I don't know what happens next, but Bitcoin can find a bottom somewhere. And if you've got some cash, you just try to guess where.
Well, and when's the next time they get up for grading onto the S&P? That's got to be coming up
pretty short. December, I think, is their next opportunity. If I remember correctly, I haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, so in a month to a quarter, there's still a high probability they get put onto the S&P.
Yeah, and, which will change everything.
Yeah. I did see the overall treasury companies, they added only about 14,500 Bitcoin, which is the smallest monthly increase of all of the year. Total tracked holdings are now just over 4 million Bitcoin, worth roughly $444 billion. They did talk about firms offloading some of their Bitcoin, because we've been hearing about that, but it was only 39 Bitcoin that the firms have sold. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely slowing down, but I don't think it's over yet. And even BitMine, they just announced the new CEO. BitMine, of course, is like the second largest treasury company. They just told Ethereum. Got like $11 billion of Ethereum, and they took a guy that came from one of the venture funds, M1720, spent a decade at HSBC and had been head of Asia and global banking. And now what Tom Lee is saying is that he's bringing a unique blend of experience, insight, and leadership across technology, DeFi, and financial services, enabling BitMine to further position itself as the bridge between traditional capital markets and the supercycle Ethereum ecosystem. So be kind of interesting to see what happens with BitMine now, Tim.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's kind of in the same boat. Once you're convicted and you're buying Bitcoin and you went through all the work to buy Bitcoin, you're buying it at 100,000 or Ethereum at 3,500 or 4,000 or whatever, it's like, why sell? Like, you just started. You just got the conviction enough to buy. Are you shaking out already? like, no, 39 Bitcoin are sold, and Bitcoin treasury companies hold close to 1 million Bitcoin now, something approaching that, 800,000. I don't know. So yeah, 39 is not a Bitcoin crashes to 90,000. Bitcoin strategy companies dump Bitcoin, right? Like the headlines are very bear market headlines. So we'll see. We'll see if this is a few months or a few years. We got to wait.
I feel like we've been talking a lot about Zcash in the past couple of weeks and how the privacy field is definitely picking up lately. Biotech company Leap Therapeutics just purchased just under 204,000 Zcash tokens, like an average price of $245, and it was up near $750 for a little while. So I've become the largest corporate bet on the privacy-focused crypto. They rebranded their firm to Cyberpunk Technologies. They're going to have a digital asset strategy with Zcash. I think that private placement was led by Winklevoss Capital. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. The Winklevoss twins have seen some of this before. Even Arthur Hayes kind of came out and said, if you hold Zcash on a centralized exchange, withdraw it into a self-custodial wallet and shield it. So he's expecting people to come after it. And by that, I mean probably governments, right? They don't want that to happen. They want to be able to track everything you do.
Yes. Yes, they do. I still am surprised that Zcash is making a run and making splashes and stuff, just because it seems like an antiquated technology. We haven't talked about it in years, and for it to make a bounce back wasn't something on my bingo card.
Yeah, it looks like they've been doing some updates to it here recently, and yeah, I think there's, with everybody realizing that Bitcoin is not truly anonymous, there's a need to try to find more security. So, and actually, you talk about Ethereum, they're trying to get back to the privacy piece too, right? So everybody's talking about it now. Zcash is one of the ones that's leading that headline, but even the Moneros and stuff like that are still gathering a little bit of steam too. Solana also was in the news, some of their digital asset treasury companies. So VisionSys AI announced a new direct offering, which it expects to grant around $12 million in proceeds to Solana. Their shares crashed more than 77% on Wednesday. I think it's now down to like sub 30 cents. They had originally announced an intention to create a $2 billion Solana treasury. Well, I don't think they bought anything, and I don't think they're going to be around very long if that's going to happen to them.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all.
Let's move on to some of the world news. You talked about Czechoslovakia. The Czech bank just made their first purchase of digital assets. They created $1 million test portfolio that included Bitcoin, an unnamed USD stablecoin, and some sort of tokenized deposit. So this was made outside of their existing international reserves. They don't plan to actively increase it, but they're just doing an experiment rather than a substantial policy shift. But I think once they start, and they'll, like everybody else, realize, okay, we should do more. So that's big news. That's probably the first bank that we've heard of that's really bought Bitcoin. So this could be the start of something interesting.
Yeah, I bought an experimental amount of Bitcoin with my portfolio 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And it only goes in one direction. Like, especially, like, what a mentality to have too. It's only $1 million, and check, I don't know where they stand from a GDP standpoint. I've been there. It's nice, but it's not a lot of money, but it's more than zero. The hardest thing to do is to buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. And so once they're out of that, they're going to sit there and pay attention. And again, maybe they'll get a little bit, maybe their algorithm will start feeding them a little more Bitcoin type of news and a little less European global macro, you know, interactions and social problems and all the kind of political fray that keeps everybody entertained. And it'll give them some more like base level economic knowledge. Maybe that's kind of the best case scenario. But yeah, definitely better than nothing. And honestly, okay, check about $1 million. All right. Well, if I'm Bosnia, you know, if I'm Switzerland, Poland, I got to start paying attention, you know? So it's a good thing for Bitcoin.
Yeah. So one of the other countries that we feel like we should be talking a lot more about is South Korea. right? Just been one of the leaders in crypto, and there hasn't been a ton of positive news, but one of the largest, five largest banks there, NH, I think is how you say it, they just initiated proof of concept to digitize the VAT refunds for inbound tourists and validate a real-time settlement model using stablecoins. So they're going to do this in collaboration with Avalanche, Fireblocks, and MasterCard, and I think Worldpay too. But that's interesting, they're using the Avalanche blockchain to do this. And it's kind of a cool idea, right? So doing it all real time rather than having to submit everything. If you ever had to submit all your VAT receipts after you left a country, this would be awesome. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this goes and if it becomes a new standard globally too.
Yeah, that'd be nice. You know, speed of transaction is a valuable piece to the stablecoin stuff. So yeah, I think the more people are aware of stablecoins, the more use cases will pop up. This might be a good one.
Japan also had some really interesting news. Their financial services agency is finalizing a sweeping plan to reclassify 105 cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, as financial products. So this is probably one of their most significant regulatory shifts since kind of the Mt. Gox era. So these 105 assets will have the same disclosure, reporting, and market surveillance standards used in all the traditional securities markets. In addition to that, too, we talked about Japan having a crypto tax rate up to like 55%. So they are now going to declare crypto profits as miscellaneous income, which will push the effective tax rate from 55% down to a flat 20%. So still a lot, but that's a huge difference for some of those people in Japan. And I think it could take effect as early as 2026 is what everybody's saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like there's a tax arbitrage that's going to get filled, you know, when Japan's tax rate is 55 or whatever. And then you have Metaplanet do what it did and become a Bitcoin treasury company. And the tax rate there is 20% or whatever it is. But something's got to give there. And it makes sense that they're making some changes.
Yeah. And someone next door, Taiwan, there's now a debate going on in their parliament as they're reaccessing Bitcoin as a possible reserve asset. So their premier ordered an updated reserve analysis and a full Bitcoin inventory this year, when they appear to be kind of reassessing their long-term position as they face a lot of risk tied to U.S. and China dependencies. And they, I think one of the vice co-chairs of the caucus there has said, Taiwan cannot afford to remain behind the curve in accessing whether digital assets, particularly Bitcoin, hold strategic value in a modern reserve framework. Global conversations have already moved forward, and that delays threatens Taiwan's monetary security, institutional credibility, innovative competitiveness, and geopolitical financial resilience. So calling on the government to create a national grade custody framework to retain confiscated Bitcoin and accelerate crypto-friendly legislation. So what's crazy is their foreign exchange reserves right now stand at about $600 billion. And 80% of that is in U.S. Treasury bonds. I would be a little worried about that right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, Taiwan's selling a lot of the superconductors and chips that are going into this AI crypto, you know, innovative new industry. Like, they should probably, instead of taking the revenue that they get from the sale of the hardware for this industry, instead of buying U.S. bonds, they might want to kind of diversify into their, basically into the industry they're in, right? Like, you know, if you're a butcher, you know, there's not a lot of vegetarian butchers out there. So if you make your money on semiconductors and microchips, you know, might as well own it and stop buying U.S. treasuries and start buying Bitcoin or coin in crypto related assets.
Yeah. Alibaba was in the news too. They just announced they're planning to launch a stablecoin-like global payment system in December. It'll use the banking partner JP Morgan, their technology, and it would compromise the tokenized fiat payments that would support the company's e-commerce network and streaming cross-border business-to-business payments. So I think they're going to start with USD and euros tokenized to start. So that will be really interesting. And then on top of that, they're also planning to roll out a feature called Agentic Pay, which uses AI-powered smart contract to automate settlement disputes and fund releases. So, I mean, this is a pretty big deal. I mean, Alibaba was like a $137 billion company last year. So them moving into this could create a lot of use case for some of these tokenized solutions too.
Yeah. And, you know, with Alibaba, yeah, you get on there and, you know, you're buying 100 umbrellas or whatever for cheaper than you can buy 20. But that, okay, great. Great use for stable coins because it's small transactions and it's cross-border payments and there's a exchange rates and things like that. But with Alibaba, you're also connecting corporations in the United States and other countries to factories in China, which are going to require the wires, which are going to cost $60, $80 or $100 or something stupid and take 2 hours of your time to sit in the bank and deal with it. So, yeah, if you jump to stablecoins, now you can be Alibaba, the exact same company doing the exact same stuff with way less friction on receiving payments. That would be way better if you're looking at it from the Alibaba side. If you're looking at it from the customer side, it's also better because you don't have to go sit in a daggum bank. You have to drive to the bank and wait and then send in a wire and then hope it went through. So, yeah, I think I'm on board with this.
Then it takes 3 weeks for the wire to clear, right? So
it's trash.
This will be huge. So yeah, that's a system that definitely needs to be changed. And so I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yep.
UK actually had some pretty good news here recently too. So it's wild. Some of these countries that have had bad news are starting to have good news. They approved a London-based Clear token to launch a regulated settlement service for digital assets. So this is just another step in their push to modernize the crypto infrastructure. They are going to seek for Bank of England to allow it to expand into clearing and margining services through the central bank's digital security sandbox. So that will be interesting to have more businesses in the UK focused on settlements for digital assets, because that's where a lot of their money's made and a lot of it's leaving the UK right now. So good for them to actually make some plans to try to keep it there.
Yeah, it's been a while since we said something positive about the UK.
Yeah, we did talk about another company not too long ago in the UK, BDNK, that was a stablecoin infrastructure company that Coinbase was looking to buy for about $2 billion. Well, Coinbase just walked away. They didn't say why. I know MasterCard was also looking at it. So we'll see if MasterCard jumps in and there starts to be conversations there. But I guess there is some sort of issue there with Coinbase walking away, which seems weird. I guess it was $2 billion too, so maybe it was just way inflated.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these deals don't go through. You know, that's why you mostly hear about them after it's over. That more fall through than actually go forward. So that's whatever. I don't consider that to be too big of a deal. It's honestly just kind of weird that we heard about it first.
So Bermuda was in the news. The Bermuda Monetary Authority has reportedly issued the first license to a decentralized derivatives protocol. It's going to be a DAO-governed DerivaDex. If you think about the BWA, they've been on kind of the cutting edge of this since the beginning. They were the Coinbase's first license when Coinbase was expanding internationally with their derivatives offering. So it'll be interesting to have a DAO-governed DEX and instead of the centralized stuff. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes, but yeah, good for Bermuda.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, got to make moves. And I mean, I don't know much about DEXs and whatnot, but if people are going to play with stuff, let them play with it. Bermuda's got a lot of freedom to do that. And that's why FTX was all about it.
Yeah. Cash App made some big news here recently too. They rolled out 11 product updates and made more than 150 improvements to meet the way that people earn, manage, and share their money today. That includes some more flexible banking benefits, some AI-powered navigation, the ability to send and receive stablecoins, and more, right? And one of the big updates that I saw was users can now pay in Bitcoin using the Lightning Network, even if they don't hold the cryptocurrency. It'll automatically convert their U.S. balances into Bitcoin, send on Lightning Network, and then convert it back. So it's, I think, a pretty big deal that they're doing this. And what you're seeing now is one of their competitors, Zelle, is looking at also using stable coins as well. So I think the other thing that I saw with the Cash App, the stable coins piece, so whether they're going to send, they're actually going to use the Solana network, which is kind of wild for Jack Dorsey, kind of a Bitcoin maxi, to using something else to send stablecoins.
Yeah, no, put me on the list of thinking this is a great idea. Like, it's kind of like Lightning, where you can go from dollars to pesos with using Bitcoin in between. But also, if you're the merchant, you can keep the Bitcoin. It's a little less friction for Bitcoin to kind of get part of the economy. So, and Square is huge in the small business world. So I would think, in my Bitcoin mind, that, you know, the bottom up approach to Bitcoin adoption, allowing Bitcoiners who have small businesses to accept dollars and convert it directly into Bitcoin, at least create some conversations about Bitcoin. So I'm for it.
Aave made some big news too. Their app is going to support deposits and withdrawals to over 12,000 banks and debit cards, as well as unlimited stablecoin transfers. Their interest that they're going to give is going to accrue 24/7 on the app. I think it's going to start at like 5% per year. You'll have additional opportunities to earn rate boost by inviting friends and setting up automated deposits and verifying KYC. But if you look at Aave, I mean, they're one of the gold standards out there. All their stuff has been oversecured, so borrowers require deposit way more than they borrow, meaning your savings are backed by more than 100% of their value. When they're making a return based on the small difference between the savings rates offered to users and the underlying rates earned. So, yeah, that's exciting. I think that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah. No, more kind of crypto sandbox stuff. You know, some of the stuff will stick.
We haven't talked about prediction markets yet. So Polymarket is kind of quietly back in the US. I think they're in beta mode. Even though you can access them, they're still making quite a bit of noise. They just partnered with Yahoo Finance. So Yahoo Finance will exclusively use Polymarket. I think like Google Finances uses Polymarket and Kalshi. They also announced a multi-year partnership with TKO Group Holdings, which will be the prediction platform and for the exclusive partnership with the UFC and Zuffa Boxing, which I think is kind of a big deal. And there's probably a lot of opportunity in the UFC side. And then, not to be outdone, CME Group and FanDuel announced that they're going to launch a prediction markets platform in the US in December. And it'll be a standalone app called FanDuel Predicts. So I think they're kind of coming after more of the sports market stuff too. So, yeah, a lot of stuff happening in the prediction markets.
Yeah, I mean, as the world becomes more gambling friendly, it makes sense that this thing spreads like wildfire. I think it's kind of like ties back to the dollar falling apart and pushing people up the risk curve. So it makes sense that people are gambling because why not? They can't save up for a down payment on a house. So the only way they could have a crack at it is to jump forward with gambling and go in higher risk. So it makes sense to me.
So Dromos Labs, which is the organization behind Aerodrome, which is the base for the Coinbase, is the layer two based DEX. They just launched a new trading hub that they're dubbing Aero. This will allow them to expand onto additional Ethereum chains. So, I mean, that's kind of exciting. It's getting off of just Base and allowing them to do on everything else for much cheaper than I think what everybody else is doing. So good to see you called Aero. I'm sure most people won't really pay attention or care about it, but that is another thing that you're seeing growth happening from the whole Base network and expanding and talking to other networks now too.
Yeah. More stuff, more opportunities for something to go right.
We have talked a lot about Hyperliquid here in the past month or two. They've been kind of this hot company doing really well with the derivatives. They just temporarily paused some of their Arbitrum-based deposits and withdrawals. Apparently, they had a community-owned vault suffer about $5 million in losses. There's, I think, some potentially malicious Popcat trader did this. Even though it's a DEX and had some great things going, it doesn't mean that it's perfect. So they're kind of working through some of those details. But yeah, so be aware. Everything's not amazing right now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like when I was dabbling in all this stuff, it was like, little freaking dip your pinky toe in, like be super careful and wary, like buyer beware of everything. So that would be my advice.
We haven't really talked much about RWAs, but the Solana company, which was the company that rebranded from Helios Medical Technologies back in September, they just announced that investors will be able to hold and transfer tokenized representations of its share They're going to use Superstate's opening bell tokenized platform. So they'll have round the clock access to trading their stock. So that will be kind of cool. And that's good to see more companies do that.
Yeah, round the clock access, I think, is good. You can see it when things go weird after hours in Bitcoin. It's the first mover. So the more things that move to 24/7, the better.
So I feel like we typically talk, or I typically try to bring up interesting use cases for Bitcoin. Have you heard of a untine?
I don't think that I have.
So this is an, I think most people are familiar with acuities, but, or sorry, annuities. There's a product coming to the market now that's going to allow Bitcoiners to pool their longevity risk into a Bitcoin-based trust and then be paid an income for life. So it'll have a lot more transparency and probably a higher income than an annuity. Tontine Trust is the one that's going to do it. And it's interesting. If you go back and watch the Simpsons episode of The Curse of the Flying Hellfish, they have a Tontine in there talking about some of the art that a couple of people had entered into a Tontine for. So it's an interesting concept. I read a little bit about it, and it pretty much where there was a handful of us that put into a group. Once all of a sudden we start dying off, that money would get passed on to the group. So your income would go up as things continue down the path. And then at the end of the day, it would kind of get rolled over to, I think, everybody else. So it's still a little fuzzy from what I read, but it's kind of a cool idea. And I'll be intrigued to see if there's more people that really jump on this moving forward.
Yeah, I like the Bitcoin supplement to traditional finance vehicles, whether it's like this or whether it's like the Cardone real estate vehicle where they overdrive the funds, they get a loan for a luxury apartment complex or resort or whatever and generate cash flow, pay 4% or something nominal to the investors. And with all the rest of the cash flow, they buy Bitcoin over time. And so at the end of the 5 years or 10 years period, they have the resort, or they have the real estate, they have the cash flow, and they have a bunch of Bitcoin. And if you believe that Bitcoin's going up, the Bitcoin is there. Now you're liquid with a portion that you can sell some of your Bitcoin. You could refinance on the real estate piece. You could liquidate. You know, there's just so many options on the back end of that, as opposed to buy real estate, use the cash flow to pay your bills, or reinvest into more real estate. Like the optionality is really, really strong when you add Bitcoin to these other vehicles. So I have it in my head that it's sort of like that.
Some other interesting news. We've talked about John Deaton. He was running against Elizabeth Warren up in Massachusetts for a Senate seat. He's now trying to do that again, this time against Senator Ed Markey. He's not super pro crypto, at least in his messaging right now, because Elizabeth Warren was so anti crypto. I think that was where he's focused on. But it'll be intriguing to see where things go. I think he said he still needs some help from the crypto world out there to be successful. And there's not a lot of people that I think are optimistic on in being able to beat Ed, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Senate seats are tough. There's a lot of money and effort that goes into a Senate campaign. So, but this will be his second one. So at least he knows really kind of, I'm sure he knew what he was getting into, but it's different when you actually do it.
Yeah, we're talking about privacy on Bitcoin, and I saw something recently. There was a Detroit man that just got jailed for 9 years after sending Bitcoin to what he thought was an ISIS operator, but it ended up being, I think, an FBI agent. So this guy thought he was going to pledge his allegiance to ISIS, sending Bitcoin payments, providing technical documents on weaponizing drones and organizing intelligence operations. He used a VPN and encryption software to try to mask his transfers, and he got caught. So it's crazy that that's happening, that there's people over here doing that. But then again, I guess starting to get to the point where nothing's crazy anymore. It's all normal.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. If you're so anti-American and you're funding ISIS, instead of funding ISIS, you could just hop on a plane and move and just live in the Middle East and the paradise that they've created over there. So I don't know why you would do that.
I think he even like recorded a video saying that he pledged his allegiance to ISIS, and like, it was crazy. I think we're back in May. There was like this guy in Virginia that got 30 years in prison because he sent about $185,000 in crypto to ISIS operatives in Syria, and back in like 2019 and 2022. So it's wild that's happening. But
$185,000, move to Aleppo, live in Syria. why stick it out in Virginia where you're miserable, surrounded by all this just terrible progress and success that we have here? Why don't you live in Syria and dodge bombs all day? Like, it's just a dumb thing to do.
And the last thing that I saw was kind of crazy. There's a Bitcoin user that spent $105,000 to send $10 in Bitcoin. So there's a lot of people. There's a couple different theories. One, he could have been high as shit. The other one would have been this was done on purpose, right? So I don't know. I don't know if we'll know forever type of thing, but just be careful if you're sending Bitcoin. Hence why you play around with this in the beginning with small amounts, that you make sure you set a max transaction fee level too.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't sent a ton of Bitcoin, dozens of on-chain transactions, I'd say. I have never manipulated my transaction fee. I just get what I get. Like, so to, you know, if you are doing that extra step to change your transaction fee, that's another thing to have to double, triple check, is in addition to the address, in addition to the where the decimal point is, in addition to everything else. So to me, like, you're making it more difficult. It's not expensive to use on-chain transactions right now. It's got to be. I haven't looked, but let's be honest.
30 to 70 cents, right?
Yeah, it's crazy right now. I mean, you know, we're at $89,000 Bitcoin. Nobody wants to freaking do anything at all. Why are you jacking up your transaction? I mean, you're going to get in the next block. There's the blocks aren't full. I don't know that the mempool's empty, but under a dollar, it seems like it's empty.
Spending $10 while you're not using the Lightning Network.
Yeah.
It's free.
No kidding. So, you know what? If you're a whole Bitcoin holder and you send a transaction and your transaction fees are all Bitcoin, then yep, you just donated it to a miner. Like, good work.
I think there's something fishy going on there. So, but who knows? I don't know if we'll ever know. It's just kind of a wild thing to see.
Yeah.
What else did I miss?
I got all check boxes on my list of notes, my man. I think we actually nailed it today.
Yeah. So kind of a crazy week with the price action. It's one of those where it might be an excellent opportunity to get in. So my hope is this is very short term, but who knows what's going to happen at this point.
Oh, yeah. I think you're either low like this for a few months or a few years. Those are your options.
Yeah. Cool. Well, as always, appreciate it, Hal. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens over the next week. We'll talk more then.
Sounds good, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.